This is The Guardian.
Today, how environmental protesters are being silenced, even jailed, just for saying the words climate change in British courts.
Today in Focus is supported by Rainforest Trust. In honour of this year's Earth Day, we're promoting Rainforest Trust's Brazilian Amazon Fund throughout April. Rainforest Trust is a 501c3 organisation, which means that 100% of all money donated goes directly to conservation efforts. The fund has already helped protect more than 6.5 million acres of rainforest habitat, but Rainforest Trust still needs to protect a further 13 million acres to reach its goal. You can help. Donate online at rainforesttrust.org/earthday this April, and your generous gift will be quadruple matched for the Brazilian Amazon.
Over the past few years, protests over our rapidly warming climate have become larger and more disruptive. What the public usually sees is the paint on the walls, the smashed glass, the soup thrown at famous art.
What is worth more, art or life? Is it worth more than food? Worth more than justice?
But there's more to the story. When a lot of these protesters are arrested, end up in court, and have the chance to explain to juries why they took this action, in many cases, the juries agree, and the protesters get acquitted. Three Counties
Radio. Now, a former nurse from Milton Keynes has been found not guilty of criminal damage following an Extinction Rebellion protest.
And for the UK government, that is unacceptable. They've poured time and energy into gradually closing off the avenues for climate protesters to defend themselves in court. There was just one major defence left, telling the jury, here's why I did this. If the people I targeted knew the stakes, they'd agree with me. And now the government has come for that defence too. From The Guardian, I'm Michael Safi. Today in Focus, as the planet gets warmer, why is our right to protest to save it withering away? Sandra Laville, you're an environment correspondent for The Guardian. And for the past few months, you've been following the case of a woman who we're going to call C. And it starts with her facing court last year over a climate protest. Tell me about it.
So C was accused of causing criminal damage as part of a number of direct actions last year against a number of political party premises and Friends of the Earth premises in a protest about lack of action as was perceived that these groups are taking to tackle climate change. So it was a criminal damage action. It was daubing paint on a number of buildings, in fact.
Okay, and what did she say when she faced court?
She argued in her defence that the people who owned the buildings that she targeted with paint would have consented to the damage had they been aware that it was carried out to alert those responsible for the premises to the nature and extent of man-made climate change. So she said that there needed to be a shock impact so that they would wake up, whether that was a political party who weren't doing enough or an organisation like the Friends of the Earth who weren't doing enough. If you'd known, if you knew the circumstances in detail, you would have agreed to me doing this.
I didn't even know that kind of defence existed, that if the political parties or the NGOs that C targeted with paint knew the extent of the climate crisis, they actually would have consented to what she did.
Yeah, I mean, the defence stems back to 1971 and the Criminal Damage Act, and past cases of this consent have been, for example, if a dog is locked in a car and it's dying and you smash the window of the car, people would use that defence and they're charged with criminal damage to say that had the owner known that I was saving their dog, they would have consented, or their child, in fact. So climate protesters have used this, rather cleverly began to use this defence last year. They were able to use this defence and to argue that it would be a lawful excuse for me to do this to raise awareness.
Interesting. So she made this impassioned case to the jury. How did they respond?
Well, so she and a number of her co-defendants were acquitted after a full trial at criminal court.
How common is that for defendants to use this consent defence and use it successfully?
Yeah, I mean, there's been a string of acquittals over the last year of climate protesters who charged with criminal damage, where juries have been allowed to hear the evidence of the protesters. And that evidence would include facts and figures about the climate crisis, about global heating, which perhaps most jurors wouldn't know, actually. And those have been successful to a large extent last year. We've had a number of acquittals by juries.
Interesting. Tell me about some of those cases.
So there was a group of nine protesters that caused £500,000 worth of damage at the London HQ of HSBC. They were all acquitted.
Behind me is Wood Green Crown Court, where I've been for the last 5 weeks with 11 other people on some quite serious charges. But we were all found not guilty, which is an amazing win for the future of humanity. The point is, when you have a jury who are representative of ordinary people, they make really good decisions.
And then there's a group of protesters who took part in something called the Burning Pink demonstrations. And that was a number of actions, if you like, against political party headquarters, against Friends of the Earth, Greenpeace, all involving sort of daubing paint and the individuals being charged with criminal damage.
After a bit more time, the actions will be realised for what they are, which is a bloody great wake-up call to these political parties.
Sandra, why is it that protesters are having to resort to a defence like this, to having to stand up in front of a jury and say, yes, I did this, but here's why?
Well, this has become the last defence available to protesters, environmental protesters, because there has been a steady whittling away of all the other defences available to them over the last 2 years. That's the reason they have chosen this rather, I mean, slightly obscure defence using the Criminal Damage Act in the last year, because actually the actions of the government, the Court of Appeal, have stripped away any other defence.
Tell me about that. What's been happening to all of these other defences that protesters could have used?
So one of the main defences that protesters might use is the Human Rights Act. We all have a right to protest under the European Convention of Human Rights. And it's known as the proportionality defence. It sort of says that if you convict me of this offence, you are disproportionately encroaching on my human right to protest.
Mm-hmm.
That's been used very successfully in the past. Most successfully, 2 years ago, when the four individuals were found not guilty of pulling down the statue of the slave trader Edward Colson in Bristol.
The four defendants were part of a crowd which toppled the statue of the 17th century slave trader Edward Colson in June 2020. It was dragged through the streets and dumped in the city's harbour.
So a jury acquitted those four.
This was the moment the so-called Colston Four emerged from Bristol Crown Court after being sensationally cleared of criminal damage.
You know, there was huge sort of excitement about that, but huge anger by the government. I mean, openly expressed anger by Conservative MPs.
Can we guarantee, for example, that the same thing won't happen to the Churchill statue? Because ultimately, you know, if I was a radical left activist in London now, I'd be encouraged by that verdict. And I think, well, maybe actually we can go and remove the Churchill statue. And let's not bother engaging in the democratic processes, because we think it's wrong, so we want to topple it, we want to take it down.
Yeah. We're offended.
And actually, you know, London is quite a left-wing city in the same way that Bristol's a left-wing city. So can we guarantee that the jury put together, composed of people from London, won't be that different?
And that really led to this movement to take away this defence.
So in that case, the protesters who took down the statue relied on their human right to protest. How did the government strike back?
Well, what happened was, obviously, you cannot appeal a not guilty verdict. No one can appeal a not guilty verdict.
And that means that the mob needs to be stopped. The police must have all the powers that they need to stop the protesters who use guerrilla tactics.
What the Attorney General, who was Suella Braverman, did was take this point of law on the human rights defence to the Court of Appeal for clarification, they call it, but actually she was challenging the right to this defence, essentially. it's a power that the Attorney General and the prosecution establishment in Britain have, but it's very rare that they use it. She took it to the Court of Appeal and she won.
Yes, friends, as Attorney General, I had to go to court to get some of these simple truths established. The judges agreed with me last week in the Court of Appeal in the Colston statue case.
So the proportionality human rights defence fell away for people charged with criminal damage in protest cases. And that sort of spun out across the courts in Britain, and individual judges then banned other defendants from using that defence. So that defence was knocked down.
So that defence, saying I have a right to protest, stopping me from doing so would be disproportionate, gets knocked down by the Court of Appeal. What were the consequences of that?
What the courts did next is they interpreted that Court of Appeal ruling in individual cases, and individual judges behind closed doors made their own rulings on cases not just involving criminal damage, but involving lesser public order offences, public nuisance, for example. They made secret rulings, you know, in the absence of the jury, which we know about, but we cannot report because of contempt of court restrictions, to say that, right, this defence is not available. Therefore, you won't be able to say these words, climate change, fuel poverty. You won't even be able to mention the names, the words Martin Luther King and the US civil rights movement, because that goes to motivation and it goes to your human right to protest and you can't say it. They gagged, judges gagged defendants.
Sandra, you're telling me that some protesters who have been arrested over climate demonstrations have been banned from saying the words climate change, fuel poverty, or mentioning Martin Luther King in front of a jury?
Yeah, in a number of cases in a London court that happened. The words are written down in the ruling, they can't say these words. And a number of people actually breached these rules and they were jailed. They went to jail for between 8 and 10 days,
wow.
Number of individuals.
That's incredible. I mean, it's incredible there are people who were in jail in the UK just for saying the words climate change in a courtroom.
That's right. It is extraordinary.
And has the government just sought to fight this battle in the courts, or is it doing other things?
No, the government has also introduced new legislation which came into force mostly last year, two new Acts of Parliament, which restrict further the right to protest.
A new police crime sentencing and courts bill plans to restrict protests by bringing in measures including setting noise limits and imposing start and finish times.
It's the Public Order Act. It received royal assent yesterday, and up to 12 months in prison and an unlimited fine for protesters who block roads.
They make locking on, where you handcuff yourself to something on a road, for example, they make that a criminal act. Walking down the road slowly is a criminal act. Anything that interferes with the sort of institutional function of Britain, I think the words are, has become a criminal act. So it's very, very restrictive, I would say, legislation to further clamp down on the rights to protest. So it's like a twin-pronged approach. They're bringing in new legislation, which arguably, you know, is vote. At least it goes to Parliament and is voted by MPs for and against. But then this action through the Court of Appeal, where they see acquittals, they don't like them, they go round the back door, if you like, and they challenge the law via the Court of Appeal.
It's interesting here that it's juries of ordinary people who are sometimes siding with protesters, suggesting there is some public sympathy out there for them. Why do you think the government is so intent on cracking down on them?
When all these protests started, when Extinction Rebellion was founded before, you know, COVID, I think the days of 2019, when there were parties on bridges across London, police were seen dancing with protesters.
We love you, we love you, we love you, we love you.
There was a kind of brief moment when the press, the Daily Mail and the likes of those newspapers kind of went along with it. And then there was a moment when there was a big sort of boat put in Oxford Street, Oxford Circus, which held up people quite a long time. And that was a sort of turning point.
By the way, please move back. Move back. Keep moving, brother. Keep moving, brother.
Priti Patel, as Home Secretary, started to come down and say, these people cannot be allowed to disrupt our way of life. That was a turning point. And she put pressure on the police to take harsher action. And it's chicken and egg, really, whether the media then followed that or the politicians followed the outrage in the Mail. But there was really a turning point after that, and no longer were they considered sort of interesting extroverts, if you like, but they were considered to be some kind of threat to the British way of life.
I refuse point blank to allow that kind of anarchy on our streets. And I'm right behind you as you bring the full might of the law down upon that selfish minority. The very criminals who disrupt our free society must be stopped.
So, in response to that supposed threat to the British way of life, we've seen this pincer movement that you've described, trying to whittle down the defences available to protesters through courts on the one hand and through legislation on the other. As of about a week ago, the last defence available to many protesters was this consent defence that you told us about, the one used last year in the case of this woman, C. What did the government do in response to that case?
So again, they did the same thing as Suella Braverman did with the Colston Four. They went to the Court of Appeal on this point of law in the 1971 Criminal Damage Act to say, should this defence be available to protesters? Or is the law being interpreted too broadly? That was the point of law the Attorney General took to the Court of Appeal.
And you were in the courtroom that day. What was it like to watch that hearing play out?
There's no jury. It's the Court of Appeal. It's three of the most senior judges in the land sitting above you. And then there's two barristers. And they're really arguing dry points of law and precedents in the law. You know, there was a moment when the lawyer for C said that if you take this, the ability for a jury to hear this evidence away, it's a slippery slope to taking away freedom of speech and to taking away the rights to jury trial in this country. So that was the most colourful and passionate it got. It was really dry legal arguments out of context.
And then a few days ago, we got a verdict. What did the judges say?
So it just took a few minutes for the Lady Chief Justice to read the summary of her ruling, which effectively said that beliefs, motivations, political and philosophical concerns of a defendant were too remote from the damage, i.e. they're not directly linked to the damage, to be a circumstance of the damage.
Senior judges have confirmed the protesters do not gain a free pass to cause criminal damage on the basis of the belief that their victims support their cause.
So therefore, they didn't qualify for this defence. And that if you talked about the effects of climate change or the facts of climate change, that would be inadmissible for this defence.
What does that mean in a layperson's terms? When the judge says too remote, what does she mean?
She's probably saying, who knows, but she is probably saying that if you go back to the baby in a hot car, the windows are closed, the mother's gone to the supermarket and somebody coming, a passerby, smashing the window and taking the baby out, the circumstances of the criminal damage are very directly linked to saving that baby's life. What I think she's saying about the remoteness is that you saying that you believe in climate change and you believe that not enough is being done is too far removed from you daubing paint over a building.
Breaking a window to rescue a dog is fine. Daubing paint on a building to rescue the planet, too far.
It's not.
You spoke to the protester C about the appeal court's case. What did she have to say about it all?
Well, she's really upset and very angry about it. I mean, she was acquitted. She was found not guilty. And part of the reason she's remained anonymous at her request is because she doesn't want to be trolled by on social media. She doesn't want her innocence, her acquittal, to be questioned as a result of this Court of Appeal decision, because the Court of Appeal decision is not looking at her not guilty, it's looking at the point of law. So that's why she didn't want to be named, but she's very angry about it.
One thing that strikes me about the government's strategy here is that we have this justice system built on trial by jury, and really crucial to that is what information that jury gets to hear. Do you think you have to be a climate activist or even someone particularly concerned about the climate to be scared of where this is all going?
No, I don't. I think there's a fundamental insidious attack on rights to trial by jury by the back door here, because anything, it just happens to be climate protests at the moment. But if some other issue comes along and people use this defence, there could be another application to the Court of Appeal. You know, because actually we do have trial by jury, and there's a plaque in the Old Bailey in the Central Criminal Court which talks about jurors and the ability to come to a verdict on their conscience. That's their decision. The judge sums up on the law and they decide on the facts of the case. So I do think it's a really insidious precedent, actually, for taking information away from the jury.
Coming up, with no defences left, what do environmental protesters do now?
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com. The number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
Sandra, what will this week's verdict mean for protesters who find themselves in court in the future?
Well, I think we've already had an example when there was an adjournment after the initial court hearing and the justices were writing their judgment. There's been a court case at the Inner London Crown Court where defendants were charged with criminal damage, very similar to other cases where there've been acquittals. And the judge in that case decided not to allow this defence to the jury, even though the Court of Appeal hadn't even ruled yet, and they were found guilty. Mm. So, you know, I think there's a fear that not being able to present any defence, the jury doesn't hear the full story, and that's it, they're found guilty.
And you say that there are no defences left, like the government has succeeded in whittling them down now to zero.
That's how it feels. I mean, talking to lawyers, there are no defences left. And I've sat through trials where there is no defence. There's no ability to present your case in any meaningful way.
Do you think if enough people on a jury were able to intuit why this person is in the dock, why they did what they did, do they have any option to acquit that person anyway?
Yeah, they do. They can act on their conscience. They absolutely can. I mean, again, the judiciary are pushing back at this idea that a jury can, faced with the facts, go the other way. But it is the case, and it's happened time and time again. So they can. But you'd have to be a very bold jury. And in fact, there have been cases, at least one case I know about, where there's been a threat from the judge that they might be in contempt of court. All these things are going on in courtrooms across the country, almost quietly but in plain sight. You know what I mean? It's whittling away a jury's right to hear. And you have to be a very bold juror to go against the whole system of the law as you see it in the courtroom.
Sandra, you speak to environmental activists all the time. They're people who are compelled to act in the face of what they think is a kind of intolerable threat to the environment. Do you think they'll be deterred from these kinds of actions in future?
I think some of them will, definitely. And you know, some of them have gone to prison for a very long time, have come out and are now considering whether to take part again. I think it absolutely will affect some people. There might be others who come along and decide to take the risk. It's very hard. They have to be very brave to stand up and resist all this. So I do think it will affect people.
We start with some breaking news this hour. In the past minute or so, European scientists have said that 2023 left the records tumbling like dominoes, confirming it was the hottest year ever recorded.
All of this is happening in the context of a planet that has never been hotter, that's never seen more destructive floods and hurricanes and cyclones. And it seems like we're building here to a showdown because the urgency of this problem is becoming ever more stark, while at the same time, the government's willingness to stop people protesting about it is also growing, that we're building here to something potentially really dangerous.
Yeah, I mean, I think really dangerous on the part of not cutting our emissions quickly enough and across the world, and in terms of the government setting itself up against society, you know, individuals in society who want to raise their points. And there are things happening, you know, in British courtrooms which we've written about in the last few days, you know, that actually when you tell people who don't know, they stop you and they go, really? I mean, it's extraordinary.
Sandra, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And that was Sandra Leville, an environment correspondent for The Guardian. Before we go, if you haven't already, please check out our new podcast series, Black Box, which I think is the guide to artificial intelligence that you've been waiting for. It's 7 funny, sad, surprising, and always fascinating stories about people whose lives have collided with AI. This week's episodes are about a man who found himself accused of a crime by an algorithm, and the story of Eliezer Yudkowsky, who spent decades warning the world not to develop AI, only to watch it come to life in the past few years. And now he thinks it just might kill us all. It's called Black Box, and you can find it wherever you listen to Today in Focus. And that is it for today. This episode was produced by Sammy Kent. Sound design was by Rudy Zagadlo. The executive producer was Elizabeth Casson. And we're back with you tomorrow.
This is The Guardian.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
How can a people-first approach to higher education transformation improve success? An EY report suggests that taking emotional and psychological factors into account is just as important as the technology. 6 factors drive this human-centered approach: leadership, inspiration, care, empowerment, investment, and collaboration. Get these right, and they can more than double an organization's chance of transformation success. Learn more about people-first transformation at theguardian.com/transforminghighereducation. This message was paid for by EY.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.